Hi, today is September 3rd, 2016. This is Mobile News Podcast number 173. I'm Kato Gasso Ward, my good friend John Westfall, and we have breaking news. Did it? So Apple has had an unused but verified Twitter account for a couple of years. I've been following it. Of course, I've never actually seen anything. But The Verge reported that it's showing signs of life since they actually added a icon. It had the egg all this time, but but even though it was verified. And
it was a verified egg.
A verified egg. And the speculation by The Verge, which I think is reasonable, is they're going to start tweeting on September 7th, the day of their whatever it is they're going to announce.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That wouldn't surprise me. So we actually haven't put it on our rundown to talk about all the rumors of what's going to happen on the 7th. I think it's pretty obvious.
Although we have spoken about it.
Yeah, earlier. We're expecting new iPhones, obviously.
Right. Probably maybe a new iPad, but maybe not.
Yeah, and probably a new Apple Watch, at least the announcement of it, even if it doesn't ship until later.
Right.
And there's so many sites that just do all the roundups of all the rumors and all that. I think next week our discussion will probably focus around, are we buying things or not?
Absolutely.
But this week, yeah, I think the Apple, well, I do have some iOS stuff I'll talk about later.
Okay.
But we're not going to spend too much time talking about the 7th because others have, I think, done it very well.
Yep.
But I do think that this Twitter account is something to keep an eye on.
Yep. So, and if you can't guess, it's Apple. That's their Twitter account name. APPLE. Twitter.com/Apple. And it shows a little verified check mark, so we assume it is the Apple. Okay, next up is not an Apple news, but it is something that I've been interested in, and that is the next Nexus phone, which apparently will not be called a Nexus phone. So there's reports by Android Police that Pixel is going to be the new branding to be used for their phone, so it'll be a Pixel phone to match their Pixel tablets. Or actually, Pixel Chromebook.
It keeps two out of the five letters.
Right, and more importantly, it avoids the namespace collision since the very first tablet that Google released under the Nexus branding was called Nexus 7. So that was back in 2012. So if they released a Nexus phone, Nexus 7 phone, it would have been really confusing even though it's 4 years later. So a good idea, I think, to change the branding. I hope they changed the price modeling back to what it was with the original Nexus, though. So the original Nexus phone, I think it was pretty affordable. It was like $250 for the Nexus 1, or $200 maybe. More recent ones have been $600, $700, I think. I think I paid $650.
Yeah, well, and then that was, I think they were a little underpriced when they first came out because people, it was very strange to the idea of just buying a phone from not your carrier, but someone else.
Right.
But this $600, $700 is just, with no subsidy, it's really crazy, I think, to try to get that option.
Especially since there are very good Android phones now that are in the $350, $400 range.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
So we shall see whether or not that's true. So the Android Police also reports that this announcement will happen on or around October 4th. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm also hoping that they'll release the version of Chrome OS that runs Android apps around that date.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads me to my next thing. So earlier this week, Acer announced a whole new lineup of various devices. But the one that caught my interest is the Acer Chromebook R13. And the reason is that this is a convertible Chromebook, which means it has a physical keyboard attached. But you can flip it around. I don't think it detaches, but you can flip it around, hence convertible. And it becomes like a touchscreen tablet. Arguably kind of a thick one, but still. With a 13-inch display, which is huge. It's bigger than an iPad Pro at that point. And it will run Android apps in Chrome OS. I would assume all new Chromebooks will. It starts at $399 for a 16-gigabyte storage version. I'm just kind of wondering, though, they announced it'll come in 16, 32, and 64 gigabytes, I think. And I asked them what the pricing points. I asked Acer what the pricing points would be for those larger storage models. They didn't want to say. They wouldn't even confirm the $399 was for the 16 gigabyte. But let's assume that's true. And the question is 16 gigabytes enough for a Chromebook? And I don't know the answers, having never used one. So we'll have to wait. I think it also comes with 4 gigs of system RAM.
Yeah, and I don't really know either. Yeah. But it seems to me that we've been talking a lot about running Android apps on Chrome OS. And
yep, well, mostly me, I guess.
Well, and it's just taken forever for this to happen. Yeah. So I worry that it's almost too little too late, but we'll have to see once we finally see these things sometime between now and the next presidential election cycle.
Well, that said, you know, the Chromebooks seem to be selling well, even without Android apps.
And, true, very true.
And I think, and I don't know, well is, I don't know, you know, like MacBook level. I think they sell more Chromebooks than MacBooks now, which is actually saying quite a bit, because MacBooks are very popular, despite the fact that Apple's overall OS 10, or I guess it's Mac OS now, overall Mac OS market share is about 5% of the total market. But still, very much looking forward to this, because I've always wanted an instant-on device in a network form factor. Of course, we kind of had that with the long-gone handheld PC Pro, which filled my needs at the time. You know, back in the late 90s and early 2000s. Well, actually, like 2000, I think is when it was discontinued. But it was great. I mean, I used to have that on my dining table, just, you know, kind of sitting there when we're not eating. And it was great. You need to turn it on, check your, you know, email or whatever, and you're done. You just, you know, suspend it and turn it on again when you need it. Versus, you know, booting up from hibernation or even sleep on some of these devices still takes a while. So if I can do that and run Android apps, you know, which is really the big missing thing to me. I'm really on board. You know, I was hoping whatever I buy would come in at around $299, but $399 is still doable. I think that's still affordable. I can save my nickels and dimes and save up for that. So looking forward to that. I also asked them when it would be available. I think they do say in October, but I said, is it going to be October 4th? when I would guess Google is going to announce the availability of Nougat's already available, but we'll announce the availability of the new devices, whatever they may be. Of course, if Google itself releases a Chromebook, I'll definitely take a look at that too. Hopefully it's not like their Pixel Chromebooks, which are $1,200 or some ridiculous price and discontinued now.
See, this is just why I don't really get into Android as much as I used to, because I would just be buying too many things. I already have my hands full with buying Apple products and probably planning on... I am like 50% thinking I'm going to upgrade to the iPhone 7 Plus, and I'm about 100% sure I'll upgrade to a new Apple Watch, but I couldn't just, you know, adding Chromebooks and, you know, regular upgrades of Surface tablet, which I will put that down. Another thing, after your things on the rundown that you'll find kind of maybe shocking and maybe interesting that we can add in. But
okay.
I just, you know, three platforms, I can barely keep up with two right now.
And I'm going to, again, you know, the Apple announcement, I don't think we're expecting any announcement on a MacBook front from Apple next week. At least I'm not. I'd like to hear something, but I doubt it. Okay. Next up is one I wanted your thoughts on, Dr. Westfall.
Well, you and I both have backgrounds in psychology. Mine extends a little bit farther into formal education. Yours extends a little bit farther into life experience. So I'd say we're about equal at this point. So go ahead. What is this whole thing that you've just dug up?
So, the Boy Genius Report, aka BGR, interestingly enough, it's only on the Indian site, apparently. It's not on the American site. But and it's in English, so anybody can read it. The Boy Genius Report.
Speaks English.
Report. What's that?
Anyone who speaks English.
That's right.
Yeah,
which is everybody.
Pretty much.
So, the Boy Genius Report reports that Android users... Okay, I'm looking at you, Dr. Westfall, as an iPhone and iPad user. Android users are more honest and humble than iPhone users.
That's completely false. Or is it?
Well, you know, I took a look at the article, and I could not find a link to the original source. So, you know, I really don't know what the methodology is like, how big the sample size is, and of course I didn't read the whole article.
See, that's your honesty that's coming out, Android user.
That's right.
You're feeling, I haven't even looked at the article, and I'm telling you what to think about it. So, and you are apparently more agreeable and open, so you should just go along with what I have to say.
Okay. But, you know, I always find these things interesting, you know, because I also recall studies of the alleged psychological profile of, for example, people who buy SUVs versus sedans. And that one was kind of funny because I think the study was carried out by a car company.
Yeah, I'm one of those horrible people too, but whatever.
Are you an SUV driver?
Well, my SUV is a Buick Rendezvous, okay, which is actually a very cleverly hidden minivan.
Okay.
It's built on the GM minivan chassis, but it looks like an SUV. So it's it just doesn't roll over like an SUV. So I have a hidden SUV when you think about it.
Okay. So you're saying this is completely false.
Of course.
In your humble, honest way.
Is going to be presented at the British Psychological Society Social Psychology section in Cardiff on September 1st. So, 240 participants, 500, tested against the actual personality traits of 530 Android and iPhone users. So, not quite sure what exactly it's looking like. It's all self-report data, so that's what it is. So. Right.
And it may only be people in Britain, maybe, or the UK.
It probably is.
Which may be different from other owners in other countries.
It likely is.
Okay, so they should have narrowed that down to Android users in the UK.
Yes,
just to keep it a little bit more honest. All right. Okay, so. Okay, so you've got a bunch of things that you wanted to talk about. I'll let you roll.
I have two things. First of all, so we've talked a little bit on here that about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, I got a Surface Pro 4 from work. It's now my work issue computer, and it lives inside my bag next to an iPad Pro, the iPad Pro Senior, the larger of the iPad Pros.
Right.
And I was thinking about it yesterday. I was thinking about how do I feel about the Surface Pro 4. And I came to the conclusion that I actually do think that Windows 10 is a fairly good operating system. Mm-hmm. This is the first time I've used it regularly in any way, shape, or form. I'm pretty happy with the Surface Pro 4. And I kind of came to the conclusion that if I did, for whatever reason, have to turn in my Surface Pro 4 or wasn't working somewhere that issued Surface Pros, I would probably buy one, just because I like having both platforms in such small forms with me on a regular basis. So I think my personal computing platform is kind of broadening from purely Mac to Mac plus a Windows tablet like a Surface Pro.
I'm not saying anything because I'm stunned.
Now, that being said, I don't see myself switching over some of the things that live in the Mac ecosystem right now to the Windows ecosystem. So I don't think I'm going to abandon, for example, my to-do list manager, which is the number two, D-O, mm-hmm. Which only runs on Mac. I don't think I'm going to abandon that for something cross-platform because I'm very happy with it. And I also don't see myself – I actually set up Windows Mail this week, and it seems to be tentatively working well for me, but I still think the most powerful email client I use is probably Apple Mail in terms of fast and efficient use of things. So, there's not things that I think I would switch over, but there are some times in the last few weeks – that I've thought, well, I'm really glad I have a Windows machine for that because the workarounds for Mac are either more cumbersome than just pulling out a Surface Pro 4 and doing something on it. Now, that being said, I don't think I'd ever want a traditional Windows laptop again.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now I'm thinking my mobile, like example, if I had to leave for 2 weeks and I was going to be away from home, I would be taking the iPad Pro, the MacBook Pro, and the Surface Pro. So a lot of pros going on. But I think that's enough for my computing needs. I don't think I want another laptop along with it. So
that's but, interesting. Yeah, you know, and I will agree with you in my humble and honest way. Because I've been using a Surface Pro 4 since late April. And aside from a few power management issues, which apparently are still there despite the many firmware updates it's had, I really like it too. And I especially, as I said many times before, I especially like the type cover. I'm really surprised how much I like that type cover. I think that that extra width compared to the original 10-inch Surface Pro and Surface, I'm making a bad sign here, Surface RT, keyboard really makes a difference. That extra, you know, whatever it is, inch and a half width or whatever it is. And I too like Windows 10. It has some quirks, but I like it. I did find one thing. You can have two accounts signed up in the App Store. So at work, it is signed in as my work account for system updates. But then there was no way to download apps. So I asked our IT folks. I guess technically I'm an IT folk, but the other IT folks, what the policy was, you know, for downloading free apps, because I wanted to try that Nebo handwriting note-taking tool. And said, oh, you can use your personal account for the free stuff. I said, really? I said, yeah, so I did. And I noticed that the Windows Store app has both accounts in it when I go to the update section now. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Very cool. Yeah. So that was my kind of shocking revelation, is that I'm pretty happy with the Surface Pro 4. I don't see it unseating anything else, but it is reassuring that Microsoft seems to be back on track after the debacle that was Windows 8 and that Windows 10. And you know what? I kind of also found myself being a little sad that Windows Phone is in such a state that it is in, because given this revelation and given the fact that the Windows devices are my work devices, the Apple devices are my personal devices, I also had the realization that if I thought Windows Phone had a future, I might actually buy a Windows Phone and try going all into the Microsoft ecosystem for a small, you know, just as a trial basis to see what I thought about it. But I don't really think that Windows Phone has a future, so
it has less than 1% market share.
Yeah, so I think I'll stay on my iPad.
Now, what if they introduce a Surface Phone?
I might consider looking at that. I might consider doing sort of what you do right now with Android and iOS. I might do with Windows and iOS.
Yeah, you know, because I've said this before with I think some of our other friends on, that if Microsoft introduced a, let's say, an 8-inch tablet that also was a GSM phone, I would consider it. And, you know, no, I would not hold an 8-inch tablet. Okay, I would, but, you know, seriously, I don't use voice very much on my phone. I think I have less than 100 minutes a month. I mean, like, far less than 100 minutes a month. So, you know, if I just use a headset, and I have a wireless headset that I'd, you know, be happy to use, I wouldn't mind having a tablet that's also my phone and, you know, just carry one thing. But it would have to have apps, and that's a problem. So it'd have to run Windows 10, not Windows 10 Mobile.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, forget that whole universal whatever Windows program thing. That's a joke.
Yeah.
But anyway, Microsoft doesn't really care what I think, so.
Yeah, we don't really know who Microsoft cares about these days. So.
Well, it's not us. We know that much. yeah, that's actually an interesting question, you know, because they've been disappointing a lot of people. For, you know, they're kind of like McDonald's, right? Disappointing, you know, a billion people for, you know, many years or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or I guess like the opposite of McDonald's. But no offense, McDonald's. I meant to say the opposite, you know.
Sue us. While we're talking about ecosystems and strange things that that are holding me up, there is one thing I realized recently that is holding me up from going all iCloud and ditching Google.
Okay. Wait, you're going iCloud?
Well, yeah.
Instead of Google, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, got it. And so the one thing that has kind of pushed me to stay with Google is that I can't send from my custom domain address through iCloud. Like my iCloud account has to send from an at iCloud, or my account's old enough, it has an at me.com address. That's one thing that Apple would get me way onto their side, and I would probably stop using most Google products, other than maybe Google Photos and some of the Google Drive stuff, just because I like Apple's privacy policies better.
Yeah.
But that is another weird one, that of a hold-up sort of thing. So
that's interesting, you know, because I actually pay for iCloud. I mean, it's not much. I think I pay $1 or $2 a month.
Yeah, I do the same.
Extra store, but it's just so I have enough space to back up all my stuff.
Yeah, same here. You know?
I mean, if I only had one iOS device, I could get away with whatever the free account is. But like you, you know, we have multiple iPads and multiple phones. Even the phones I don't have a SIM in it, I still use my old iPhone 5 as kind of an iPod Touch around the house, so it still gets used every day.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Okay. And next up, some more interesting news. I was not too surprised by this one.
Yeah, so this week I took the plunge. I figured, well, we should be hopefully at a point of stability for iOS and macOS and watchOS. So I actually upgraded my daily driver iPhone, even though you're not supposed to. You're only supposed to put beta software on your
non- that is surprising.
Yeah, your non-essential device. But I took the plunge and did it with my actual daily driver. And my daily driver Apple Watch. So now I am running iOS 10 beta 7 and watchOS 3 beta whatever it's on. And I got to admit, it looks pretty well polished. There have been a few rendering issues with iOS 10 where my device is kind of confused it here or there. I am a bit missing out because I don't have Force Touch, so I have to hold down things a little longer than I should.
Like
or
an animal.
Yeah, I know. I do kind of miss Slide to Unlock. That's a weird change to not have that.
Okay, so if the Slide to Unlock's gone, what's there in its place?
So what happens is when you power off the phone,
yeah,
and you then start it,
yeah,
and so you just press down on the home button, you put your finger over it for the fingerprint reader, and then at the top it reads unlocked, but then you still have to press the home button again to get it to actually go in. So you basically have to double press home if you're using the fingerprint reader.
Okay, and after you reboot, do you have to type in your PIN because you rebooted?
Yes, you do. So if you just tap on home and you don't leave your finger down, it'll bring up the passcode screen.
Hmm.
So and really the only UI change I absolutely am annoyed by, and I had a suspicion this was going to happen. I don't know why Apple loves to pull away things I really use, but the new music app, starting last year, you could have an up next edit what was playing up next.
Right.
There's no way to clear up next. So what I was doing before class was I was putting in the music I wanted to play, and then I would clear it, and then when the last song finished, it wouldn't play anything, which was what I wanted. Now there's no way to – I can go through and remove all the tracks, but that there's no clear all after this point like the music app on iOS 9 does. So hopefully that will get added back in or fixed, but – that clear all functionality, for some reason, maybe I'm starting to understand Apple psychology. I thought that was weird that they ever had that, because it seems like in an Apple world, you should just be happy with music streaming right after another, after another, after another, and never having your device just stop playing. But I actually used it, and I was quite happy with it. So a little bit depressing. They also took out the time for each track on the playlist screen, which is also something I used quite a bit. So now I've got, 4 minutes before class starts, I want a 4-minute song to play here or something like that.
Are there any new features that work on our, I think we now have, we'll soon have two generational devices. You have an iPhone 6 Plus, I believe.
Yep.
Not a 6S Plus, right?
Okay. Nope.
So that's why you don't have Force Touch and such. So are there any new features that work on these now aging devices that you found,
All the UI changes are nice.
Oh, okay.
The messaging is very cool to play around with, and you can draw the little pictures, and you can add stickers, and you can send with text effects and all those things that were demoed during WWDC.
So things you could do with Line for the last year.
Yeah, exactly. But here's the interesting thing. So if I send to a friend,
right,
say I send something with the invisible ink effect,
okay,
on their pre-iOS 10 device, their iOS 9 device, they get a message that just is my original message, un-invisible inked, and then another message after it that is, you know, parentheses sent with invisible ink.
Right.
And parentheses.
Right.
If I tap on someone's picture and I put one of the new ways to comment on it, so I put a heart or I put a thumbs up or something like that, the message stream for pre-iOS 10 devices reads, I like this, or I love this, or, you know, that. So basically, you start to sound like you are becoming, you're just streaming your consciousness when you do these things, because they're not seeing the actual text effect or the actual sticker that you're putting on something. They're just getting what Apple is explaining to them you've done if they had iOS 10 and they could see it.
Right. So it's an emoji to text translator.
Yeah, but the emoji functionality, so the ability to, say, type the word dog, and then the word will turn red, and you can tap on it, and it will turn into the emoji of a dog, that does work pretty well. So I've been pretty happy with doing that. It's kind of fun to play with.
Okay. And what about WatchOS 3?
WatchOS 3, so... apps that are in my dock do seem to load a little faster, although it has really occurred to me how little I use apps on my Apple Watch, probably because they were so long to load. I never really got in the habit of using them. I love the fact that I can customize some of the watch faces further than I ever could before.
I was going to ask you about that.
For example, now the photo watch face, you can add a couple of complications to it. You can move where the time is. So if you had a photo where the time showing up in the upper right didn't quite look right, you can move it to the lower right. And most important of all is you can actually edit all of your time faces on the phone, and then the changes get pushed to the watch. So you're in a much nicer editing environment where you can tweak exactly the way you want it, change colors, change the look of the screens, all those things, and then you'll just, you know, second or two later, you glance at your watch and it's updated to whatever you were doing on the phone. So,
okay, now forgive me, because I'm not an Apple Watch user. I use an Android Wear watch. Did the custom photo watch face come with WatchOS 2 last year?
Yes. Yes, it did.
Okay. And are third-party watch faces available now?
No, they are not. They are not available, and there's never been a mention of them. So we don't know what the plan is, but I suspect they're another couple generations off at the earliest.
Okay, so for the moment, I don't know how many watch faces there are that Apple supplies. Maybe, let's say, a dozen. So you've got maybe a dozen watch faces plus the custom photo watch face. Is that about right?
That's about right.
Okay, interesting. And you said you're thinking about buying the new Apple Watch if they announce one. Why do you want to do that?
Mostly because I've just been a wearable nut for so long that I really enjoy wearables, and I think I would enjoy having a new Apple Watch that was perhaps a little bit more feature-packed, perhaps had a little bit faster processor. I've really liked my Apple Watch. I just feel like there could be stuff to it that I would enjoy the new version.
Yeah.
And I don't think I would actually sell my old version because it's a Gen 1. I usually hold on to Gen 1s of things. So it would probably go into the archive or the museum, as some of our friends refer to it. So.
Well, that's interesting, you know, because as I said, I'm a Moto 360 user, and I it's the original one, and I just noticed that the other day on Amazon that the Moto 2 is prices dropped. I don't know if it's because it's not selling or whatever, but it's around $200, I think. So it's something I was thinking about getting. Although, you know, I think the only thing it really adds is the ability to talk to your watch.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't see myself doing that. But yeah, it's something to consider. But if I'm going to spend $200, I'm going to wait to, you know, save up another $200 and buy my Chromebook R13 first. But we shall see. All right, so I guess we'll have a lot more to say about this stuff next week.
Definitely.
Whenever we have a chance to record a podcast. Apple's announcement is September 7th, which is what, Wednesday?
Yep.
Wednesday. And one last thing I wanted to mention before we drop off this podcast, and it's mostly for John's benefit, since he's more of a Trek fan than I am, and I'm a pretty big fan. So the Star Trek stamps were released by the U.S. Postal Service yesterday, September 2nd. I have not walked down to the local post office to pick up my book yet, but John, have you picked up yours?
No, I have not. I will have to make a trip and get my stamps. Those would definitely be nice to have in the collection.
So, Star Trek stamps for you Trekkers out there, available as of yesterday. I think you can order them too, if you so choose, so desire, and don't want to walk all the way to the post office. Okay, John, any last thoughts? Otherwise, we are coming to the end of this Mobile News podcast.
I think I am all set, Todd.
Okay. Happy Labor Day to those of you in the U.S. This has been Mobile Podcast number 173, and I'm happy to say we are hurricane-free in Hawaii this weekend. And that was a bit of a concern for a bunch of us. Anyway, we'll talk to you next time.